Welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio, the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I am back this week with two out of our three regulars. Unfortunately, Brian couldn't be with us today. Presumably, he is smuggling cocaine in the Gulf of Mexico. But coming back to us from the land of numbers, we have Michael Cayley. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm doubling with the podcast. I walked two turfs and knocked some doors, and I am ready to talk Spurs.
Following Michael, we have our sidekick. I guess he's a sidekick to everyone on this podcast at this point. We have Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing tonight?
I don't even know what that means, but I'm doing pretty good. I wrote my first internet article in like 2 years. Rustled some jimmies, you know. Other than that, I did nothing tonight.
Yeah, that
didn't knock any doors.
That website's really unreliable. They'll let anybody publish there. Not that any of us would know, but
it's a real travesty.
It's
the internet's really gone to the dogs.
It really has.
I remember the internet was good, you guys. Five years ago, we were unpaid contributors to a website.
The internet was really good when ICQ was still a thing. When ICQ went away, that's when the internet got bad. Bring back Usenet.
It was nice having to send somebody your 48-digit PIN number so they could message you on the internet.
Oh, trust me. When you were trying to get girls into you in high school, that was the way to not make that happen, was to tell them your ICQ number. So, believe you me.
Was to try to explain ICQ.
Yeah, I did that about twice, and then I realized.
To any normal human being.
Yeah, exactly. I did that twice, and then halfway through the second time, I realized I was making a huge mistake. So, not that I ever made a huge mistake again, like supporting Spurs. Or watching the game this week. See what a flawless transition that was, guys? That was just that. That is why we are such a dangerous podcast, because our transitions are so flawless. Tottenham lost 2-1 in their inaugural Premier League match at Wembley to Chelsea, not Manchester United. Anyway, they lost 2-1. It was a rather frustrating match. Michael, how frustrating was that?
Yeah, it was frustrating on like multiple different levels. It was multiple different kinds of frustrating. It's frustrating first because Spurs lost in a game that I don't think Spurs were particularly worse than Chelsea. I think that saying that we were unlucky not to win is sort of understating how good Chelsea's defense was and how good a job they did of, you know, forcing us into areas where we weren't very dangerous. But it's not like they did that much either. There's absolutely a world where Spurs win 1-0 because Alonso's They basically had those three chances. They had Morata's clear header that he puts off target. They had Alonso's free kick. Usually people don't make free kicks, and they had Alonso's shot late that Lloris didn't handle. They didn't create that much. You'd expect them to probably get a goal from that many from the chances that they had. So one, it was frustrating because the result didn't go our way, even though I think the balance of play was reasonably even. And then it was frustrating also because the way the balance of play was reasonably even is that Spurs, you know, Chelsea, they went up and they're going to concede space. But despite Chelsea having three like insane ball winners in midfield in Kante and Bakayoko and Luis, Spurs still did a good job sort of tipping the field in our direction. But then once we tried to push forward, Ali and Kane were covered, and we tried to use the fullbacks, and the fullbacks were useless. And so it was just kind of a game of constantly banging our head against the wall. And we needed Kane or Ali to do something spectacular to get chances. Kane did a couple times do some pretty cool stuff. Or we needed something off a free kick. We had I think we had 14 corners, another 4 or 5 free kick chances. And so it was just a very frustrating game. Both the results didn't go our way, and watching it was just sort of, please do something, please do something. All of this possession, all of these passes passing, and never breaking through. It was hard to watch.
There was a period, I think, sort of around halftime, particularly before halftime, where, I mean, we really did break through, and it was mostly Courtois and also Louise that really kept us out of goal. But it, I guess, Ben, I don't know about you, and I'm probably, a lot of this is recency bias, in particular games like this and the FA Cup semifinal last year, where it just feels like when these games are close, things just go Chelsea's way. And I understand that that is a simplistic reading of it. It does not account for the fact that part of the reason that happens is because Chelsea have excellent players. But, it, God, does it feels like there's a mental block or just, like, you know, God's fucking with us or something, right? Because it feels like we have games like this against Chelsea more often than we have them against anyone else. Doesn't it?
Yeah. Some might even say we're cursed. Oh. I don't know. I'm just going to put that out there. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea obviously are very good and have been, you know, they won the league 2 out of the last 3 years. They've been one of the best teams in England for a really long time. Our matches with them seem to get insanely violent in the best way. You know, everyone is kind of throwing themselves all into these matches. And so I don't know. I don't know why that seems to bend probability in their favor. But yeah, it's absolutely frustrating. I mean, I remember there was the William free kick last year and the Alonso free kick this year, and it's just like, you know, the odds of that happening as often as it seems to feels like it should be very low. I'm not an evil numbers wizard, but my layman's take on probability says that's some bullshit.
I mean, okay, yeah. all of us speaking on this like podcast, I know I did. When Alonso got that free kick, I just thought, this is going in. Because, of course,
I mean, it's, I feel that way about every time Chelsea has a free kick. And, it, you know, it hasn't gone in that often. So you
just
know,
the last two times we played them. Just the last two times we played them.
Right. But, yeah. It's frustrating because, you know, they only had 2 shots on target the entire match. And it happened to score both of them. And, you know, it was a good free kick, and their second goal was obviously a great opportunity, despite Hugo, you know, totally botching it. Like, Alonso still had a very good chance on goal. But it just feels absurd when they take 2 shots on goal and score both of them, while we had something like 47 shots, or at least it felt that way, and just couldn't find a breakthrough. I mean, the thing that really frustrated me was that, you know, we took a lot of long-range shots, as we tend to do, but we were also getting into the box. We were creating opportunities. You know, they weren't the best opportunities. You know, they still had defenders back, but the number of blocked shots I felt like was through the roof. I feel like every time we got a ball in a dangerous position and someone wound up to shoot, somebody was throwing their body right in front of it, and we just could not make it happen. And, yeah. Chelsea's good and also lucky.
I mean, there were at least 2 or 3 shots in that game that I feel like not Courtois doesn't stop. It's, I don't want to sound like too much of a bitter fan because Chelsea did what they needed to beat us, but
right. And that Kane that he put off the post is like, that's a Harry Kane shot that you feel like he scores all the time.
Yeah.
Obviously he doesn't, but you know, when they're scoring the chances that they do, you know, you'd like us to have that same good fortune.
We got
an own goal. That was good. I mean, if we'd gotten an own goal and had a brilliant shot put in, I'd say we would have been a little bit fortunate given how well Chelsea defended.
Yeah, but that's fine. If we win 2-1 because we're a little bit fortunate, that's the kind of thing that I'm comfortable with. You know, we created our own luck. That's what champions do. And I'd be okay with that. But, you know, as it turned out, luck is bullshit, and so are Chelsea.
It's frustrating, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact, because I feel like, weirdly enough, because I know we have a tendency to get a little down on the team occasionally, but I feel like the reaction to this game, on Twitter at least, has been like way more exaggerated than it should be, because, like, I mean, look at this game. Clearly part of our plan was to like get fullbacks up the pitch and expose them a little bit on the wings, and that didn't work at all, and we still sort of outplayed them for long periods of this match. I mean, our midfield was really good. I understand this is without Hazard, without a fit Pedro, without Fabregas. This is a more defensive Chelsea than we're probably going to see again this year, at least often this year. But we still looked really good against this team. I mean, if it wasn't for sort of Louise's heroics and those block shots Ben was talking about, this could have been a lot different. And I'm kind of excited to see us play a bad team next week and what we can do against them. I guess Newcastle was a bad team, but I feel like you never know you're going to get with a promoted team. So, I mean, Kaylee, what was it about our attack what worked so well about our attack that even with a key part of it not functioning, it still looks so good?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was our attack that was really good. I mean, we really tried to attack with four players, and one of them was Kieran Trippier, and he was useless. And so then we were, like, limited to... And because Trippier was useless, Eriksen couldn't find space to move around. They really sort of closed down Eriksen. And if we can't have Eriksen feeding the ball in, for the most part, we were really stymied around the box. We got very, very few dangerous passes into the box. What worked was our midfield and our defenders. What worked was that they were constantly hassling. You know, there were a couple of times that Chelsea had a chance to break through, and very quickly, Dembele especially was absolutely brilliant. Had a huge interception, couple of big tackles, and then we start moving the ball forward again, and so that was the part that I was very happy with. And I think the way you put it is really apt, that we were trying to do something with our wings that didn't work at all, and we still played well. You know, Conte won the game plan battle. And still, his team was not, was not by any significant margin the better team on the field, despite having the better game plan. And that speaks to how good our team is at doing the stuff that they do.
Ben, I want to talk to you about these tactics, because, I mean, let's put aside who we might potentially bring in, because we are going to get to that later. But looking at this team right now, let's assume for the sake of argument that we go forward with the fullbacks on the roster that are already here. So that's KWP on the right, Trippier on the right, Davies and Rose when he's healthy on the left. We've seen Pochettino, like, I know my first blush reaction to that is, like, this isn't going to work, and because his system is so reliant on getting guys up and down fast from fullback up the pitch. But, you know, a year ago, I would say this team cannot, I mean, we were saying this team cannot function properly without Moussa Dembele. And he found ways around that. Do you think Pochettino can or will find a way to sort of adjust the way we play to deal with the fact that our fullbacks aren't capable of getting up the pitch, you know, super fast anymore, putting aside whatever technical problems you might have with a guy like Trippier?
You know, I think Danny Rose is a real difference maker here. You know, he is the one guy of that cadre of four fullbacks who we know is Pochettino suitable. He is capable of burning down the wing. He attacks well, he defends well, he covers a lot of ground. When we carry two of them in Trippier and Davis at the same time, that we run into trouble. Especially in a lineup like this, where we only had, as Michael said, three dedicated attackers, and three predominantly defensive midfielders, it's asking a lot of the fullbacks to participate in the attack. And, you know, Chelsea, their game plan was to completely not concern themselves with our fullbacks. They sent Moses and Alonso forward at every opportunity. They were never concerned about being caught out. We never were able to, you know, add that extra attacker to sort of peel off, the fullback and the wide center back to create space for our other players in the final third. And that's going to be a problem a lot, especially against good teams. Against worse teams, you know, when we already saw, you know, what Kieran Trippier can do against the Watfords and the Hulls of the world. You know, if he's allowed to camp out in the final third and just ping in crosses, you know, it kind of works. He can stay as a dedicated attacker, and when you don't have defenders of the caliber that Chelsea have, you know, he's going to have more luck and more effectiveness with that type of passing. So, you know, I think, you know, in our back three with wing back system, we're pretty okay for a lot of the games over the course of the season. It's figuring out how to manage the harder games that I think is going to be a problem with our fullback system. I'm not sure what exactly the answer is. Getting another attacker like Sun on the pitch, you know, and letting our fullbacks stay more conservative because we have another guy further forward, and trusting that a midfield of Wanyama and Dembele is sufficient, that we don't need Eric Dier in there as well. It will allow us to commit more forward without relying on overlaps from the fullbacks. You know, there's a way it can work, but, you know, it definitely limits us by, you know, keeping two key components of last year's attack now no longer in the picture.
Yeah, it's sorry. But it's funny as I'm looking at Trippier and thinking about his role in the team this year, and, you know, if this was 2 years ago, if this is sort of old Spurs where, like, we're fighting for maybe fourth and we know it's, like, not a long shot, but it's going to be hard, you know, there's part of me, knowing Pochettino's track record with fullbacks, where I'd be kind of willing to be like, all right, let's see what he can do. Let's see if he can develop. Because I'll bet, you know, by the end of his time, you know, at Spurs, that Mauricio Pochettino will make Kieran Trippier a better fullback than he is today. The question is he going to be good enough for what Spurs want to do now? And the problem is, like, we're already seeing the squad start to break apart this year, and I think it's going to get worse next summer, because I think Dele Alli is going to try to make a move. Barcelona might make a real serious push at Eriksen that they haven't made yet. I mean, I think this team's going to start to fall apart a little bit, and it feels like, I mean, Michael, I know you've said on multiple occasions, this is the year we should be pushing for a title. I don't know if that's feasible given what's going on in the league, but certainly this is, you know, I mean, we should be doing everything we can to win a title right now before the squad is entirely broken up. And I just don't think we have time to get Trippier. If it's possible to get Trippier to the level that we need him to be, I don't think it's going to happen in the time frame that works for the rest of the squad. And it's just, oh, it's so frustrating.
I don't think there's any, like, magic coaching that can make him fast.
I don't think there's magic coaching, but I think that he could make him smarter in terms of the way we play and adjust the system that we play. But I think that's going to take time on both ends. And, you know,
the thing about Pochettino is he has always been very slow to adjust his tactical system. I mean, that back three introduction last year was a really shocking departure for the way Pochettino has played all along. And so when the system he's built depends on fullbacks who are quick and willing to take on a man down the wing and occupy defenders, you know, Kieran Trippier just can't do that. You know, he doesn't try to take anyone on. He's not fast enough. He's not good enough with the ball to beat the opposite fullback. So it's going to take a massive shift in what our fullbacks are supposed to do to make a guy like him and a guy like Ben Davis work. You know, if we lose Rose as well, you know, the time it's going to take for Pochettino to hit on that system, like last year, by the time he got to the back three, it was December. And there were plenty of drop points along the way that could have made the difference between first and second. And that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in. He might get there. I think he's a good enough coach to figure it out, but it's going to take time, and it's in a league with six really good teams where, you know, the fine margins is what's going to separate everybody. We just don't have that time. And that's what could hurt us. You know, if Danny Rose stays and it turns out Kyle Walker-Peters is the perfect heir to Kyle Walker and is ready to go and is, you know, really fast and does all the things Kyle Walker did, it might be fine. We might figure it out really quickly. But betting on that going into the season is terrifying to me.
There's a reason he didn't start against Chelsea, but did against Newcastle, and it's not just the injury. I mean, it's they clearly trust this kid to some extent, but yeah, they don't trust him against a team like Chelsea. And given the fact that Trippier did look a little gimpy on Sunday, you know, like, we maybe could have used a fully fit fullback, but, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, not to turn this into the Kieran Trippier podcast, because God knows we do that too often. but let's talk about, let's transition to some transfer talk, because let's start with our fullbacks. I want to start with Danny Rose, because I think he's the big transfer news that has reliably come out this week. It seems like, I think Dan Kilpatrick or one of the Spurs journalists, maybe all the Spurs journalists, it always seems to sort of get passed around them like a virus. But they talked about how Danny Rose was having talks with Tottenham for the future of his role with the team. This seemed to be a mix of United is interested in buying him, and also something came out in there that Danny Rose hasn't really talked to Pochettino since he talked to the Sun a few weeks ago. Michael, is he gone? I feel like he's gone unless Daniel Levy's really intent on proving a point.
I mean, I think Daniel Levy is really intent on proving a point.
Yeah, but I think Pochettino would get rid of him tomorrow if he could. But
yeah, I think that Levy is not going to this late in the window have to, you know, assign whatever exactly our scouting and analytics departments are to finding a left back, as well as trying to solve all the other problems he's trying to solve. It's just not reasonable to think in 9 days we can add that problem to our docket and get it done in a manner that's efficient, either in terms of money or in terms of winning soccer games. And I think that because of that, the Kilpatrick's report is quite specifically that Levy is going to tell Rose's agent that Rose is not for sale, no matter what he wants. So I think he's going to stay. And the question is how well him and Pochettino can recover their relationship. But I think it's just too late for anything to happen.
And I think Levy would be very interested in putting down a marker. I mean, we're going to have a hard enough time retaining our team in the next few years. But, you know, if we can get both of our fullbacks pulled off of us in the same offseason, especially when Rose is not a guy we wanted to see go, you know, that's, you know, not great. And I think he'll be eager to prove that he's not willing to let that happen to the team, hopefully, at least.
My one concern is another transfer rumor that has cropped up recently is the Ryan Sessegnon from Fulham is linked with Spurs yet again. And now some of the reports say that Pochettino sees his future as a winger, not a fullback. He's played both for Fulham. But, you know, we know he can play left back. He is only like 16 or 17.
17 now. He was 16 when he was good in the championship.
So, okay. So he's 17, which is obviously very young. But, you know, given his experience in the championship, you know, it's not insane if we were planning on relying on him next year. If that's how things shake out, we say we got Sessegnon, we can let Danny Rose go for a huge fee. We trust Ben Davis, clearly. I don't know. I'm just saying it's not impossible. I think there are enough pieces on the board that to me make this rumor terrifying.
I see where you're coming with that, and that could very well be the case, but I see the Sessegnon thing as more of a Manchester United sniffing around him. I think I've read some reports that Chelsea's interested. I mean, I think with Sessegnon, it's more of a, I think Spurs are getting the sense that if we don't move on in this window, we're not getting him. And in regards to where they see him playing, I don't know. I mean, this seems to be like sort of a Dele Alli situation. Not that he's going to be as good as Dele Alli, but just in terms of like, he's really good. Just get him in here and we'll figure it out once he's here. Certainly,
yeah.
We can use a a winger or a left back. You're right. I might be wish casting here. I hope I'm not.
No, I mean, I think that's a reasonable hope. I'm just saying that hope is tainted by fear, and that's the fear that every Spurs fan has every transfer window.
Yeah, but getting Sessegnon.
Also, I don't understand why Fulham would sell him. If they've held onto him this far through the window, like they can hold him for another year and get even more money and have a good player and fun player for this season.
Unless Spurs maybe they negotiate get promoted. Like a sellback deal with it. I don't know. I mean, it depends on what kind of pressure the player is putting on them.
The best case scenario, I guess, would be we buy him and we keep him at Fulham this year, let him develop another season. You know, we keep Rose and then Sessegnon comes in next year a little more ready for the Premier League.
Honestly, I'd rather have him in our team and learning our stuff. But if that's like what it takes to get him here, like I'm happy making that the price we pay.
I mean, that's the story of what happened with Moussa Dembele at Fulham also. They wanted to keep him for another year, and we said no, and then we missed out on him and ended up with Jansen. We may have learned our lesson.
I don't know if that's exactly a miss. This idea among Spurs fans that Moussa Dembélé, the striker, is necessarily an upgrade on Janssen. I just, based on his success in the Scottish Premier League, is I find that dubious.
Right. I mean, Scott Sinclair is killing the Scottish Premier League too. Like, obviously, you know, you take that with a grain of salt. But after his record in the Championship and his record in Scotland and his age, you know, there's reasons to think, you know, highly of him. I think he may be just another Vincent Janssen, but given that Vincent Janssen is Vincent Janssen, I can see us kind of looking back on that transfer as a missed opportunity because we didn't need him for that year. We could have bought him, and now, you know, we sure could maybe use him. And so I think if that similar offer is on the table from a similar club, or from the same club, and Levy has that opportunity again, I think he might take it.
The problem is it's clearly going to take at least £30 million to get Sessegnon off of Fulham's books. And, I mean, A, that's a lot of money for a prospect. Although, I mean, Kayla, you were talking, this kid's got great numbers, right?
Yeah, he was putting up really productive numbers in terms of especially end product, shot assists and shots and goals. But his open play contests are perfectly respectable. His progressive passing is perfectly respectable. And again, he was 11 years old. His voice hasn't even dropped yet, and he was playing against adult sized people in the Champions League, which is ridiculous.
The Championship, you mean?
Championship, playing against adult sized people. The thing about the Championship is that whatever else it may be, it's definitely not a place where you can get by if you're not physical enough to handle the challenges of the Premier League. And to be able to do that at 16 while also being productive, while also being creative, is really exciting.
Well, and that is a good thing. I hope we get him. You know, I mean, he seems like too good a lottery ticket to entirely pass up on, and he's the kind of guy Spurs should be sniffing around. So hopefully we get him. Foyth looks like he's back on since the last time we recorded, which, yay, I guess. That's another lottery ticket. Not going to cost us that much money, so sure. It seems
those
like
are the kinds of lottery tickets we should be buying.
And it seems like it's just like PSG wasn't just, I don't know, they got bored. They got too busy making geopolitical statements with their ridiculous transfers budget.
Yeah, because Foyth doesn't advance Qatari soft power, so what are you going to do?
Exactly. Why bother? So that's going to happen. That's good. Michael, we talked about Davinson Sanchez last week. I believe, I can't remember if it was done then, but it looked like it was going to be done. But now it is done. Ben and I opined on it enough. Do you have any hot takes on Sanchez that you want to share with us? His dancing skills, I don't know if you've seen the Twitter gifs. Yeah. I'm very impressed. I'm extremely impressed.
Yeah, my takes on Sanchez are not particularly hot. Like, this is a guy who looked like he had all kinds of upside and tools, but was pretty shaky in the Eredivisie. And I mean, you saw this at the if people watch the Europa League final, it's the main place people, me, have watched him play. He was really good in the open field. He did some really impressive things, holding tight to Marcus Rashford, shutting him down. He also like ran into midfield and lost the ball and had to run back a lot in ways that put his team under a lot of pressure. And so, you know, Spurs made money for him. Like, he's ready to be a really good center back right now. And he's not a lottery ticket because he's got a much higher level of performance than like a lottery ticket, but he's still a project. We might luck into him just like making the leap right now and being really, really good. But, Spurs fans should be patient with him despite how much money it cost. We shouldn't think about the transfer fee as meaning that he needs to be ready right now to be a success.
I mean, I'm glad if we're going to get a player like this, it's a defender, especially a center back, because I really trust Pochettino to whip him into shape. So hopefully that's good. I'll say one thing. I don't know how much this counts for, but Ajax fans seem to love this guy. And I don't know if it's like a heart and hustle thing or he displayed the technical gifts. Both. How does he feel about Nyan Cat? I read several
topical reference.
I try, Ben. I try. I read several glowing reviews of this kid from Ajax fans in various social media forums. So, I mean, Spurs fans love Lewis Holtby, so I don't know what that tells you about anything, but it's better than them. It's better than the reaction Newcastle fans had to selling Moussa Sissoko last year. So, that's something. Balde, we got a super bomb today, right, Ben? Or a super boom?
Super boom.
I'm sorry, I don't want to violate any trademarks here. So, do you want to explain
after stepping all over Nyan Cats?
I did. I'm sorry.
Tancredi Palmieri, the least reliable journalist. Even warrant the name, I don't know that he does, but
that's saying something. That's saying something in world football. That is. I don't even know if I believe that. Surely there has to be somebody less reliable.
I don't think so. So he often drops these super booms of hot transfer gossip that, you know, he's insisting are going to happen. I don't know if one has ever come true, but it certainly doesn't have a high track record of success. So, you know, I'm going to take anything Tancredi says with a lot of skepticism. As I said in the last, Keita Balde is exciting and would be good. Michael, do you have better opinions than that?
Yeah, I think Keita Balde would fill a couple of important holes for us. He's a guy who can dribble and pass the ball into the 18-yard box. He's a guy who gets on the end of a good number of chances. Spurs fans, if he is the guy we get, you shouldn't be looking for him to be like a sudden scorer. His expected goals over performance last year was insane. 15 non-penalty goals compared to 6.5 XG. That's going to come down. But the rest of the production was very good. The guy would come. Don't expect the goals, but you don't need the goals for this to be a player that we would want. But he's going to go to Juventus, so we're not going to get him. So,
I know obviously you just said that, but let's assume there's a world in which Spurs get Balde. What does that transfer fee look like? Because I've seen so many different sort of takes on this. Would it be close to what we did with Sanchez? Would it be higher than that, lower than that?
I think 30 million is the number.
What was it?
I don't know why. I don't know if it's 30 million. I don't know if that's a release clause or what, but that's the number that's been floating around.
Okay, because I was seeing like in the high teens earlier in this process, which always seemed off to me given his production in Serie A.
Yeah, player pricing is there are huge inefficiencies in player pricing going on right now.
Especially Balde with the English markets involved.
For 30 million seems reasonable in a world where Salas cost 40 million. But obviously it doesn't make any sense in a world where people are paying 200 million for a player. So who knows? I think what we're seeing is the football teams don't have a clear handle on what to do with the new revenue. And there's a huge variance in how much sort of in terms of transfer fee and in terms of wages teams are willing to pay for the same kind of upgrade and teams are demanding for it.
So two more transfers I want to talk about today. Ben, we're rating some City youth player, aren't we? Or it seems like we are now.
We are. We have been in for him for a while. I don't know if I'm going to say this right, but Jadon Sancho is at least what the letters look like it should be pronounced. We were in for him earlier in the summer and got rebuffed, and now it looks like it's maybe happening. He is a winger, striker, attacking midfielder type. I don't know a lot about him, but by all accounts, he is a insanely good prospect. Arsenal are also in for him. But it sounds like we've laid a lot of the groundwork over time. We are rumored to be bidding $3 million for him, which seems dirt cheap for a lottery ticket like this. I don't know more than that, other than buy him. His youth record is ridiculous. he has, for the U16s for England, he has 4 goals in 4 games. And for the U17s, he has 13 goals in 16 games, which seems made up levels of good. But I don't know. He was player of the tournament for the under-17 UEFA European Championship for England this year. By all accounts, he's awesome. That's really all I can say. And he has been wanting out of City for a while now. I think, you know, his road to the first team at a team like that is obviously going to be difficult. So, yeah, bring him on. I hope it works out.
Yep, keep getting lottery tickets. So finally, I don't know, we've devoted a lot of podcast time and time on the site, which we'll talk about in a second, to this guy, which I think it's an important conversation. I'm glad it's happening, but it's a little ironic just considering that I think at the end of the day, these transfer rumors might be a little flimsy. We got some more stuff on Serge Aurier this week. The Times, I believe, said that we were negotiating a fee for him and that the big holdup is his ability to play in England, which I do believe was probably going to be the primary factor in which and whether or not we get him, unfortunately.
Ability, not in the sense of soccer ability, in the sense of whether he legal. Can get cleared to come to the UK to work because of his conviction.
Yes, his legal, I should have been clear, his legal ability to play in England. I think that is going to be the determining factor here, sadly. Although, frankly, if it keeps him out of here, I don't really care what's doing it. But we talked about this extensively last week. Ben and Michael, you both co-wrote a very good article about your feelings as to why this is not something Spurs should do. For moral reasons, today I would encourage everyone who hasn't read it to go read it. It's on Cartilage Free Captain. It's excellent stuff. It's sort of a more coherent version of what Ben was saying last week on the podcast. Michael, you weren't here with us last week. Obviously, if people want to see your thoughts, they can read the article. But if you just had any, you know, thoughts you wanted to add about this issue, about Serge Aurier coming to Spurs and what that means for us and, you know, I mean, the floor is yours, whatever you'd like to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, just the thing that has been striking, and this is, you know, having written the piece, and I hope you all take a look at it if you haven't. I was pretty happy. Both of you were pretty happy with how it came out, and I thought we made the answer we wanted to make. But, you know, in getting responses to it and seeing some of the responses going around Twitter, what seems to be happening is that a lot of Spurs fans are feeling emboldened by this story, feeling in response to people like us trying to argue that, you know, Tottenham should consider the feelings and experiences of their LGBT fans and take that seriously, that they have a responsibility to those fans to make their fandom as positive and productive and not have being a Spurs fan be something that makes their lives more difficult because they have to be reminded of the amount of hatred and violence in the world. What comes very clear is that it's not just that this signing, this story would make people would cause suffering to our fellow Spurs fans, but that the worst elements in Spurs fandom, the most bigoted and hateful and violent, would feel emboldened by it. Would they're already speaking out, so threatening violence in their, you know, ha ha joking form that I think we've seen in the last month is not a joke at all. And if Spurs want to be associated with those people, if Spurs want to be associated with those threats of violence, then they can go ahead and sign Aurier and not do anything about it. But if they do it without having him, without making sure that they make amends, that they make those connections with their fans, that they take the initiative and make sure that Spurs LGBT fans feel included, feel welcome, that they understand that this is something that Aurier feels sorry for. If they don't take those steps to make amends, they will be associating themselves with and emboldening those worst elements in the fan base. And I really they shouldn't do that. That would be really bad.
It's interesting, as the person on here who did not write that piece, I thought one of the things that was interesting about the reaction, obviously there were a lot of Spurs fans who had a very positive reaction to that, and I don't want to pretend that that wasn't a sizable, even a majority of, I mean, you guys can speak better to that, but of the reaction you guys received. But I definitely saw some pretty nasty, gross, aggressive tweets in response to that. And I was thinking about this where a less, like, let's say just a less, like, woke, if you want to use that word, but, you know, someone who's just not as tuned into politics or LGBT issues or what have you, might, without, you know, coming at it from a negative angle, just without thinking about it, say, oh, what's the big deal? He said some dumb shit. He apologized. Like, let's all move on. I just want to see the best team that we can put out there. But, you know, you see just by sort of, you know, you guys talking about how this is, you know, how this is negative and how this excludes fans and whatever. And it just, like you said, it emboldens those folks to make those claims and say these vile things in public forums and to people who, you know, are LGBT and all this other stuff. And it sort of proves your point. And I just thought it was interesting just how, you know, you sort of the poison, you know, you drew out the poison in a lot of ways with that article and why it's so important that we don't endorse this kind of behavior. That's not a question. That was just an observation. Ben, do you have any additional thoughts on this?
I mean, I feel like between the podcast last week and the article, I feel like I've said my piece.
God, that's a first. You said you said your piece. You don't have anything to add? That's hold on. Let's.
He was transitioning.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was thinking about saying, well, now here's the case why beyond that, you know, his baggage is bad for dressing room harmony, and that's a thing that we don't want to disrupt, and why, you know, there's a million right backs in the world. Like, I don't know. But I don't want to make that case. I don't feel like I need to make that case. If that's not enough for you, then I don't know what to tell you. And I'm not interested in having a conversation. If you can't appreciate, the harms that we've already discussed and why that's a problem for people who you consider your fellow supporters. I'm just not interested in making any other case against Serge Aurier at this point.
No, all those other cases are completely beside the point here. I mean, that's not the problem with Serge Aurier. Like, and frankly, like, I mean, again, this seems unimportant, but like, I think we've talked about this before, like locker room cancer, all these other, like, we don't know. Like, we can make an informed guess, but we're fans. We don't know. So, and that's, I don't feel like that's a productive discussion on any level. The productive discussion here is, like, you know, this guy says very hurtful things, and, you know, there hasn't been, at least to my mind, an accounting for it, and that's a problem. And I think you guys did an excellent job of both on the podcast and in your article laying out why that's such a problem. So thank you guys for doing that. Boy, it feels weird to go to Burnley, but let's try. I'm sure we can get back to our usual awful podcast style very quickly. So we play Burnley this weekend. That will be the second kind of mediocre to bad team we've played this year. But two things. One, Newcastle is a promoted team, and I feel like early in the year those games are always a little weird and unpredictable. And two, as Ben, you were pointing out before the podcast, Burnley beat Chelsea and Chelsea beat us, so naturally Burnley is going to whip our ass this weekend, right, Ben?
I mean, I think they're nailed on for the top four. I think we're really, really underselling their quality. Sam Vokes is, you know, one of the best strikers in the world, and I don't know how everyone's overlooked him for all these years.
It's 1920 all over again. Burnley's going to be on the top of the league. Somehow Sunderland will finish second. Dogs and cats living together. It's going to be weird.
Yeah. No, Burnley are fucking terrible. Sam Vokes against Chelsea scored two goals that were basically the most fortunate, balls just dropped right onto him in dangerous areas that
they were not well-worked moves, you would say.
Right, and then I don't even know who it was. That some defender who, Stephen Ward, is that who it was? Who scored like a once-in-a-lifetime screamer. Like, Burnley suck. We could still lose to Burnley because that's something that happens sometimes, but, you know, this isn't a game we should worry about. This is the kind of game that Kieran Trippier will do the things Kieran Trippier does well if he plays, or it's another game to get Kyle Walker-Peters up to speed in the Premier League, so that's exciting. It's a chance for Harry Kane to finally score a goal in August and shut the fuck up with that stupid narrative. So that's something to root for.
Speaking of, that's not the narrative that annoys me the most, because Harry Kane still wins Golden Boot, so I don't really give a shit, but I am so fucking sick of this Wembley narrative. Like, it's so annoying. And honestly, I was more mad that we didn't beat Chelsea so I didn't have to listen to that shit than I was about actually losing to Chelsea. Like, it's so annoying, because we're going to beat Burnley this week, or if we do beat Burnley this week, we're just going to have to hear about, like, oh, well, how's Wembley going to affect Spurs when they have to play a good team again because they couldn't beat Chelsea? It's like, fucking shut up. The reason we weren't good at Wembley last year was, A, our Champions League group was better than people thought it was, and B, it was an unfamiliar pitch that we had to switch our shit up with in the middle of the week. We're playing there all year this year. I don't think it's going to be a fortress like White Hart Lane, but it's going to be fine. Or it's going to be more fine than people expect. Anyway, I hope we whip the shit out of Burnley. Hopefully Kyle Walker-Peters gets another 90 minutes so we don't have to talk about Kieran Trippier next week. Michael, do you have any hot Burnley takes?
No.
None?
Nope.
That's a number.
We should win. I have one more thing to say about Wembley. So we have conceded 12 goals at Wembley now from 15 shots on target, which is just a stupidly unlucky number of goals. Like, that conversion rate is obscene. You know, unless Wembley actually is cursed, like, there is no reason to expect that to continue.
To be fair, if we've all been following the English national team for long enough, that we cannot completely write off the possibility that Wembley is cursed.
Well, we could also say that England is a terrible, terrible national team.
I know. I'm just saying that's not. Maybe it's not a completely unreasonable point of view.
Right.
I mean, a curse would explain a lot of Sven Goran Eriksson, because who could actually be create team lineups that stupid, or hire Roy Hodgson or Gareth Southgate?
I don't think Wembley was built when Sven Goran Eriksson was in charge. Maybe
curses transcend time and space. Ben, come on, you know this. True. You know this. You've read enough.
They're already building on a druidic burial ground. That thing in England.
I'm pretty sure it's built on an American Indian grave. A Native American graveyard. I'm pretty sure it is. Probably not, though. That's a bad joke.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid that with the whole druid thing.
Oh, all right, Ben. Good work. Good work.
So, thank you.
All right.
Thank you for being the problematic podcast host.
It's me.
Maybe it's a Roman imperialist graveyard.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Still problematic, but a little more suited for what we're going for.
There's a legion underneath there that is they're mad at the Gauls. They're causing Hugo Lloris to be unable to save shots. Eh?
Yeah, that's it.
I think we're
in for a rough season, guys.
This is I think the fastest we've created and killed a bit. ever, which is saying something, considering we had Tommy Carroll Vampire at one point, I believe. Like, we've killed some pretty quick. Anyway, let's do some reader questions before we leave today.
Speaking of bits,
there is.
I hope the hooks into these bits are easy because I'm getting a little tired.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I'm going to it right now, guys, is I think there is one question. Without having to be solicited for questions that every listener of Wheeler Dealer Radio wants to hear answered from us. And that is, which member of Tottenham Hotspur stared directly into the eclipse? Because I think we have all thought about this, even if we didn't realize we were thinking about this.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. Who among us didn't stare directly at the eclipse?
Me? I used my special super glasses that I got.
Were you just curious, like, even for a second?
No. No,
I was extremely curious, but I was also too scared, so I didn't do it.
I was engaged to a doctor. He sent me text messages.
Tighten that up, and that's my autobiography.
curious. So we're all thinking the same. We're all thinking the same member of Spurs, right? I mean,
that it was Hugo Lloris and it blinded him back into time, and that's why
that
he,
is a worthy effort to diversify our bits, Michael. But you know, sometimes a twist isn't what you need. Sometimes it's got to be exactly what people expect.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows it was obviously Eric Lamela. I mean, the guy's been on the road to recovery. You know, we've seen his Instagram posts.
Ben, just because a corpse back, eyes are open doesn't mean it's actually looking at something. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, probably Gallifreyan eyes aren't even harmed by the light of our sun. So it would be Erickson.
Oh man,
I'm just saying Lamela has gone suspiciously quiet on Instagram, and I think it's because he can't see anymore.
I think so. It's because he's dead, but I don't know. Ben, do you have any recordings of Tottenham players talking about their experience looking at the eclipse that you might want to share with us, with your connections at the club?
No.
None?
No, I don't.
None? Okay.
No Russian Spurs players?
No, Pavlyuchenko is no longer at Spurs.
No.
All right, good to know.
I have nothing.
Good to know. I'm sorry we have disappointed all of you.
Not giving the answer.
I'm sorry we've disappointed all of you by not answering this question the way that we should have answered it.
How should you answer it, Greg?
I don't know, Ben. Who do you think that we all might say looked at directly into the eclipse? What's Spurs player?
I mean, we know it wasn't Eric Dier because he's afraid of fire, and that's the scariest fire of them all.
But he's also a caveman, and he might just think that is like, you know, the sky god, and he doesn't know it's actually a ball of, you know, flaming gas. So your logic doesn't hold up.
Because that's what the end of this conversation is, logic.
Exactly. I mean, maybe he is a teammate with Christian Eriksen, who might have explained it to him, because as a Time Lord, he has not only, seen suns, but he has seen their birth and their death, so... You know, maybe Eric Dier does know what it is. I don't know. Since we're applying logic to this conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think Harry Kane was waiting for Eclipse the sequel before he took a look.
Eclipse 2, Living the Dream?
Exactly. You know, he wants to make sure that, like, we're going to get a real solid franchise out of this before he's willing to commit. I don't think Harry Kane looked.
He's not going to look at the Eclipse until Mark Wahlberg's involved?
That's right.
Good to know. I'm very disappointed in both of you. Maybe not unrelated to this question, comes our next one, which is, which Spurs player is most likely to be a flat earther?
I mean, you just asked the same question.
I think it's Danny Rose. Honestly, I think this is Danny Rose. I think Danny Rose... is very stubborn, and I think he just like learned that the earth was flat when he was like 10 and just refuses to change his mind.
I think I've suggested before that Kieran Trippier looks like the kind of guy who has like fringe political beliefs that he starts introducing like 10 minutes into conversation with you after you've...
But I feel like Trippier believes like he'll try to tell you that the earth is round to like impress you with how smart he is before he tells you that like the Illuminati are running our banking system, because that's what he thinks is impressive.
So you think he's a total glober? Total glober.
I think he's I don't think he's a globalist, but I do think he is a total glober. Yes.
That's an insult in flat earth circles. It's one of my favorite things in the world.
That's amazing. Wow. Ben, who do you think thinks the earth is flat on Spurs?
Can I digress? Do they have an explanation for like how the eclipse happened? Is that...
Well, I suppose technically it can revolve
around
the
flat moon
this.
Is moving in front of the flat sun.
God.
Oh.
That all works.
Duh.
And it just happens every 30 years for some reason.
Yeah, I'm sure the epicycles can explain it.
I'm trying to think, because I feel like being a flat earther means you have to be like, I feel like you invest some time and energy into it. And I'm trying to think on like who on Spurs would be really into that. I mean, Eric Dier might think the earth is flat just because he doesn't know any better. you know, as a caveman defensive midfielder who is afraid of fire.
Erickson, who has traveled through time and space, knows definitively that the Earth is, in fact, flat, and laughs at our pathetic human notions of a spherical world beneath our feet.
Because he knows that time is a flat circle.
That's right.
Exactly.
He knows better.
I don't know. Just who's the conspiracy theorist?
When you operate in 12-dimensional space like he does, everything's flat.
Yeah. No, the Earth is just a straight line to him.
Well, it's more of a wibbly-wobbly ball of cause and effect.
There's like two-dimensional Earth people. It's just one line.
Well, this is going to some weird place.
Not now. I think, you know, there will be.
Yeah.
There's going to be a schism in the flat Earth community and some more insane version of flat Earth.
Is there extension in both breadth and depth or just a line that we all live on?
All right. You guys have been very bad about bits tonight. I'm very disappointed in both of you. So we'll have a quasi-real question. This comes from Nathan, TTT Actics on Twitter. He wants to know, how would you feel about the 39th league game taking place in your state? So Michael, that would be New York for us. Ben, that would be Georgia for you. I don't know, Michael, how would you feel about this?
Tell us what states we live in?
Well, for our listeners' sake.
Is that a new bit?
Yes, everything's a bit. It's all bits.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I would not want to see a league game. I don't know. I feel like that is kind of gross. Like, it feels like a step too far to me.
You're against modern football. You're against going to see.
I like going with the lads.
You can like just like take the soda to take the subway. To get to the game.
Yeah. Well, in Christian Eriksen's flat world, there is no difference between a soda and a subway and an ocean and a city. So I mean, you're right. It really does. Nothing matters. Everything's in the same place.
I think that the key here is that the link between signifier and signified is effectively arbitrary and can be changed at any point. So you know, who cares where things happen? Words don't even mean anything.
Nothing means anything. So what does anything matter? Life is meaningless. Where can people find you guys on Twitter?
I'm in Georgia, apparently.
That's on Twitter, I think. I don't know.
At Georgia.
At Georgia. Just send tweets to Ben at Georgia.
They'll find me. They know me here.
Michael, where can people find you on Tumblr?
Yeah, you can find me sharing flat Earth memes from at Brett Rainbow.
At Brett Rainbow is a very good Tumblr. I would highly recommend everybody goes to Brett Rainbow on Tumblr. I believe it's called the Brett Rumbler. Rain Blumbler, I believe, is what it's called. It's a very good Tumblr site. I highly recommend everybody goes and visits it. Because you can find me there, too, posting about girls that spit on me at bars that show West Ham games, which is an actual thing that happened to me and Brett Rainbow, should he exist, which no one can prove except the members of this podcast who live on a linear, flat timeline where nothing matters. So his existence is really an sort of indeterminate question that no one will ever know the answer to.
All right, and we've killed our second fastest bit.
I think it's still alive and well, Ben. I think this one's got a long shelf life, if only because time is meaningless. And on that note, for Michael Cayley, for Ben Daniels, for Brett Rainbow on the flat timeline where he both exists and does not exist, I am Skip Jack. Thank you for listening, and come on, you Spurs.